Welcome to Microgrid Knowledge, where we provide news and analysis about microgrid development and trends.
Princeton University's microgrid is green, but not in ways that you might immediately expect. Joining us today is Ted Bauer, and he's the head of the physical plant. He's the energy plant manager at Princeton University, and he's going to tell us all about the humble things the college does in the mechanical room to make the microgrid green.
Be sure to pick up our free newsletter at www.microgridknowledge.com to get an early jump on prospects and trends from some of the most experienced reporters in the business. That's www.microgridknowledge.com.
Hi, Ted. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, it's a pleasure. I'm really happy to.
So you have solar panels. Well, tell me, just give me a little overview of your microgrid in terms of its capacity and what's in there.
Sure, we've got actually three microgrids, to be technical about it. One has our cogen plant, and we're serving a community of 180 buildings and 12,000 people. The cogen plant, at the core of that is a LM1600. It's a 15-megawatt gas turbine that General Electric designed for the stealth fighter or for the F-A-18, or I think the Blue Angels use that same engine.
Uh-huh.
But we use it to make 15 megawatts, and we produce about half the electricity that the university needs on an annual basis. But we dispatch this on an economic basis. So I think that's the place you were going with. We actually use this to save a tremendous amount of money for the university.
Mm-hmm.
So when the utility prices are high, then we'll generate as much power as we can. And when utility prices are lower than our cost to generate, then we'll back down and we'll just run the minimum load so that we're reliable in case they trip. But we generate very little power at times when we can buy it cheaper.
Ah,
we have a lot of other strategies that are economic, but also reduce our carbon footprint. And I think that's the sweet combination that we keep seeking in all these different projects is, how do we save money while reducing our fuel use? And if we reduce our fuel use, we also reduce our CO2 impact.
Mm-hmm. So how do you do that?
Well, the cogen was the first step, right, or one of the steps. And that's about 80% efficient between the power that it produces and the heat that we recover and make steam with that. And in the winter, we heat the campus with that steam. And in the summer, we use that steam to turn steam turbines that turn the chillers in our chilled water plant. So we maintain that high efficiency through the entire year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's still combustion-based, but super efficient. We also do things, so that's the production end, if you want, at cogen. But we also do things to tighten up the distribution and the use parts of our campus. So the distribution, we add steam traps that are very high efficiency. It's a modern version of a steam trap that's very high efficiency. We add more insulation, and we're very, very involved in building controls. So all of our buildings, we have about 100,000 different temperatures, pressures, humidities that we monitor and control around the campus.
Now, how do you do that? When you say, is there a specific program you use for that?
There's a handful of programs made by a few different manufacturers that look out at our buildings and monitor all these temperatures, and then we have a staff in a dedicated control room that's looking at all the buildings and controlling to no more energy, heat, cooling than necessary.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So anything else that you are these all the things that you do to make it a green microgrid, or do you do additional things?
Oh, that's really just the icing. That's the tip of the iceberg, if you want. We have a solar field. We have 16,528 solar panels. They make, in combination on a bright sunny day, about 4.5 megawatts. And that allows us to produce about 6% of the university's power. So that's a very attractive thing. We continue to retrofit and retrofit our plant to reduce the amount of energy it takes. So we're going around the plant and changing motors, changing pumps, and then adding variable frequency drives on anything that modulates in the middle of its range. And that helps us drive down the amount of electricity that's required for the same pumping energy delivered. We look for opportunities to do heat recovery. So we recover a lot of the heat that originally went up the cogen plant stack, and we use that heat to preheat the feed water coming into our boilers and reheat the condensate coming back from campus. So we never look at it that, we never look at it as what we own is the finished product. It's always a work in progress, and how can we continue to improve?
Now, where does the microgrid come in specifically?
Well, I think of a microgrid as the ability to support a certain community, a set of buildings, or a set of needs, electric needs, behind a electric meter. So normally we run our microgrid with our generator and our grid microgrid synchronized with the PSEG grid, with a larger electric grid. And there's many advantages to that. There's no real benefit for us to run separately as an island unless the PSEG grid's not available. We sometimes sell grid services to them. We sometimes sell power to them when our price of power is lower than theirs. So that it actually has the effect of lowering the locational marginal price for all customers in the area, as well as giving us a small revenue stream. We're still very much a net purchaser of power, but we do get a little revenue sometimes from these activities. So having a microgrid allows us, if the PSEG grid is shut down, such as during Hurricane Sandy, we can decouple from the larger grid, and we can run our run as an island. And I think that's a good working definition. You need to be able to normally run synchronized, but also have the capability to operate as an island.
And so you did that during Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah, for several days or a few days, while most of New Jersey and the East Coast was dark, we were able to keep the steam on and the chilled water on and the lights on at the university. And even some first responders came to recharge their radios or to get a hot meal or to get in out of the cold.
Wow. Yeah, we've heard that that's, there were a couple universities there that were able to do that. So in terms of what makes it green, how would you summarize it?
You know, I think it's really the process as much as any individual project. We're changing, we're always seeking, you know, how can we improve? And we look very seriously at the life cycle cost of anything. So it's not so much about the first cost of a device or an activity. It's not so much about the operating cost, but in combination, the operating cost and the first cost can inform you, you know, that, for instance, real simple example, an LED light bulb may cost more, but its life cycle operating cost is much, much lower. So we're changing over 100,000 lights around the campus.
I have a question about that.
Sure.
Because we're about to do that in my house. Do you do them as they burn out, or is it more cost effective to just replace them all?
For us, programmatically, it makes more sense to do it as do it one building at a time.
Can you say a little bit more about your heat recovery system? I thought that sounded really interesting, and we didn't get a lot of detail.
Sure, Lisa. In our cogeneration system, we use a gas turbine, and we spin a generator and make 15 megawatts. But the hot exhaust, like on any airplane, just goes out the back end of the engine. And in our case, instead of wasting it like airplane engines do, we take all that hot exhaust and we make steam with it. We use the heat from the exhaust of the engine to make steam. And then some residual heat goes up the exhaust stack. And what we found about 8 years ago or so is that we could actually capture even more of that residual heat and use it to preheat the feed water coming into our plant. It's a little geeky, a little engineering, but essentially that allows us to operate at or above 80% efficient, which is about twice what most power plants and really three times what many power plants operate at.
Now, is that different than any the way normal cogen plants work? Is it, how does it go above and beyond the call of duty?
So the first piece, using waste heat, is that is the cogeneration process, but then extracting the heat recovery from the gas that goes up the stack. Normally, it might be 250, 350 Fahrenheit going up the stack, and we're able to use even very low-grade heat. So our exhaust temperature is down around 185 degrees Fahrenheit. So we're squeezing out some of the very last BTUs that anybody could. And
Ah.
that's really what takes us beyond the basic cogeneration concept.
So you're squeezing out some extra BTUs, it sounds like. So can you
That's
say,
right.
in conclusion, what can you say in general about your microgrid and how it may represent the larger community of microgrids, or how it might improve on microgrids?
So there's a lot of other places that have microgrids that contain many of the elements, if not all the elements, that Princeton's does. I think ours is a little ahead of many because of the economic dispatch, but it serves in so many beneficial ways. Now, we talked about rigorously the microgrid is really the electric system, but Princeton takes advantage of both thermal and electric efficiencies, and by producing them together saves a lot of money. The microgrid itself adds reliability and saves costs, so that where we can generate power ourselves and save money, we'll do that. Where we can buy power cheaper than we can make it, we'll do that. And when the utility is not available, when they have some problem locally and the power's off locally, we can operate self-sufficiently. So it gives us not just a reduced operating cost, it gives us a lower carbon footprint than we would have otherwise, and it gives us some resiliency and some autonomy in situations where we need it.
So we talked a little bit about how your solar panels. If you were to characterize what makes your microgrid green, and I've been asking this question all the way through, do you think it's really all of the things you described and not just the solar?
Yeah, there's a whole continuum that you really need to think about when you're trying to reduce environmental footprint. And the first thing is really very easy, reducing use or behavior changes or turning things off that you're really not using in some way, getting benefit out of, and then producing more efficiently and or really tightening up the building envelope and tightening up the efficiency of production and tightening up the efficiency of delivery. And in the continuum, one of the last things you do is produce renewable energy. And all of these things should be done, but the lowest investment for the most, the biggest bang for the buck, if you want, is to reduce use and to use less. And then the lowest bang for the buck, the longest return on investment, might be producing green energy itself. But you want to do it in that order, so you don't overproduce or build a production system that's too big for your ultimate needs.
And I want to clarify, you mentioned about you talked about your relationship with the utility. Is that pretty common with microgrid owners? Like when you can produce cheaper, you do, but when the utility is cheaper, you purchase from them?
That economic dispatch idea is fairly common. I think some people are more tuned into it than others, but anybody who's going to make the investment in a cogeneration system is probably already pretty aware of their relative cost of production versus their cost of purchasing power. So most of us in this scale and larger are going to be economically dispatched at some level. It may not be as sophisticated, it may not be as, down to the 5-minute time scale that we are, but at least on a daily scale, most power plants think about, can I buy it cheaper or can I make it cheaper?
So can you talk a little bit about the 5-minute scale?
PSEG, that is our local utility, or PJM, the Pennsylvania, Jersey, Maryland interconnection, the local ISO. They actually, their price of producing power, or the locational marginal price, changes every 5 minutes. We're actually only billed on an hourly basis, the average price for the preceding hour. But the real-time price signal changes every 5 minutes. So the most tuned in plant operators, and we do this, watch the price and actually predict the price in advance every 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very dynamic market.
Mm-hmm. And you can do that only because of the PJM, the way the PJM works.
The utilities are obligated to post the price so that you can decide, should I buy power or should I not buy power, or make whatever operational decisions you want.
And what I'm saying is, in other areas of the country, you may not have that information available.
I can't speak about other areas of the country. My guess is that all the utilities are obligated to post that information to their customers who have real-time energy pricing.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I find the whole real-time energy pricing to be really fascinating. All right, well, this has been...
It makes it more complex, but certainly more interesting.
Yeah, it really does. Well, thank you. This has been a really fascinating interview, and thanks for sharing your time and your expertise.
Glad to, Lisa.
Be sure to pick up our free newsletter at www.microgridknowledge.com to get an early jump on prospects and trends from some of the most experienced reporters in the business. That's www.microgridknowledge.com.